This is how my week has been, by the way. This is how my week has been.
Oh, yeah, good for you. Yeah.
The diabetes.
I was going to say,
Eric, you know, was that a Raising Cane's cup you were drinking from?
Yes. I had first trip to Raising Cane's.
What'd you think?
I think it's fine. My wife and daughter were not really fans of the chicken. But I think it's fine.
I love it.
Yeah. It's a decent value, actually. It's, you know.
Every time I drive by Wasilla, I want to stop in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think they're taking any hit on income. Because most of their business is drive-through anyway.
I love their model. They're just like, we only make chicken and french fries, and that's it.
Exactly. So what'll happen is the government will say, we need chicken tenders. And they'll contract with Raising Cane's to develop the chicken tender contract to feed the entire Navy, let's say. Oh, no, Navy's had a rough week. To feed the entire Marine Corps, right? And then what'll happen is...
Kentucky Fried Chicken will swoop in.
Churches will come in and buy Raising Cane's. Yeah. So
Popeyes.
I'm a Wingstop fan, so...
Oh, did you hear about Anchorage, the Anchorage business called Wings and Things?
Oh, yeah. I saw the whole thing on Facebook.
Have you seen this, Drew?
No.
So, a business called Wings and Things in Anchorage. And I don't have any problem broadcasting this. So, it's been Anchorage for like 35 years. When they had their shop downtown, we used to order from it a ton at the hotel. They had great wings, but also great like sub sandwiches and stuff. I'm not really a wings fan anyway, but, you know, people like
their wings. Had really good salads, too.
Yeah. People love them wings, right? There are plenty of other wing places in Anchorage, though, so that's part of
it. You might even call them an Alaskan icon.
Yes.
So, the guy who owns Wings and Things decided to get on his Facebook page under the Wings and Things, like he was broadcasting as Wings and Things, but by him, like if we were on the Not in a Creepy Way page instead of just my personal page. And he starts talking about how maybe this virus thing is all a conspiracy so that the government will be able to have like digital IDs and digital health licenses or something. And he goes on and on about it. And people are like, dude, are you high? And he's like, no, not only that, but, you know, how do you know all these people died? You didn't see anybody die. Like this, all these numbers could be just made up. And he just doubled down on everything. There was hours worth of this stuff, right? Where he's back and forth with people pleading with him to just stop tweeting.
Yes.
Like, dude, you're drunk. Stop. You know, nobody's going to come to your business anymore. This is a bad business model. I don't care if it's a bad business model. We still make the best wings, not just in Anchorage, not just in Alaska, not just in the United States, but the world.
Yeah, we're not going to believe it until the men in black come and tell us.
Oh, it's just on and on and on.
I'm like, in the meantime, people are like, well, if he's not taking any precautions about this, maybe he's not taking precautions about salmonella.
Yeah, or anything else. Maybe we shouldn't order like takeout or delivery from his place, because if he doesn't believe the virus is real, maybe he's not doing any sanitation. Like, this becomes a shitstorm, and what was it, the next morning, maybe? Or was it just, must have been the next morning.
It was the next morning, because it turned out somebody discovered that his daughter had come back from Arizona and went right to work, didn't self-quarantine for 14 days.
Ugh. The next day, this and all this stuff starts coming out that turns out he was, he did time, I think, maybe, for buying the restaurant in the first place with drug money. but the best thing about it is the next day he says, well, looks like I have to fire my marketing rep. We've taken down all the marketing rep rants, and that's not how we do business here, blah blah blah.
I'm sure that'll work.
Meantime, he like deleted all of his reviews, including somehow he got all of his Yelp reviews deleted because he claimed some sort of like sinister attack by people, which is probably kind of true, but he managed to wipe out all of his negative reviews ever. So now the reviews he has now is like all great reviews or whatever. But this caused such a thing that the beauty of being in, 2020 Internet America is when you have your internet, like your crazy, possibly drunken screed on the internet, people not only get angry, but they start taking screenshots.
Yeah, it doesn't go away ever.
So he deleted all his stuff and said, oh, I'm sorry, my marketing rep had a problem. And people are posting the entire list of conversations with all these other people. And he is going after people individually. It's great.
Well, at least he didn't claim he was hacked.
No, that's true.
That'll be next. But by the way, I love Wendy's Twitter account, if you ever follow them.
Oh, yeah. They're savage.
Whoever runs Wendy's media campaign, they're not paid enough. They can't be. I love the Wendy's. They're the best.
Even when other places like try to one up them.
Nope.
They're just so good at the sort of the casual diss.
The clapback.
Yeah. But in a very elegant way.
Sometimes.
Well, it never comes off as mean, though.
That's not true, but okay. Sometimes it's mean in a very satisfying kind of way.
Well, okay.
It kind of scratches that itch where you're like, ooh, I want some more of this. It hurts a little bit, but you want it to keep going anyway.
That's a whole different section of the video store.
I've said too much.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are... This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun. Gotta give him the credit, he's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay, he just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the third film in the Indiana Jones trilogy. No, sorry. The third film.
Yep. Indiana Jones movie.
1989's Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And before we even get into it, I watched this movie for the first time last night. And when I was done with the movie, I was convinced that Drew had set this whole thing up. This was the longest con ever. And so I posted something about, like, hey, guys, just so you know, I think I've been Rickrolled in this whole thing. So we'll talk. Mm-hmm. And then Jason saw the movie when?
This afternoon.
And at the end of it, you immediately had the same reaction I did.
Yes.
Yeah. So we will get to that reaction later.
This isn't the last movie, Drew. There's one more after this.
Oh, I know. No, it's me who made that mistake.
I guess.
No. If I had to suffer through the last two, you're going to watch the next one.
So, Drew, I can't imagine this was an elaborate setup for this one punchline, but it's so beautiful.
It was a treat.
When did you see this movie last, and did you get the same reaction when you put it all together?
I did notice it. It was good. I had completely forgotten what her name even was.
Of course.
But no, the last time I watched this movie was a few days ago.
So I wasn't sure whether I had seen this movie before. It was 1989, so it would have been prime going to the movies with you guys time.
I remember this movie very, very vaguely. I remember parts of it. But I think I've seen it either on TV or on cable, but I don't know that I saw it in a theater. But maybe. I don't know.
I'm thinking I must have, but I didn't remember any of it.
I remembered very little.
Drew?
I remembered quite a bit. I'm positive I saw it in the theater. I would be surprised if it wasn't with at least one of you. But yeah, it was also on sort of our version of cable back in the day, our satellite dish. It was on all the time. So I watched bits and pieces of it you know, probably for the next 3 years. I've seen it many times. We mentioned before this was like the best example of the time about how horrible the pan and scan version of movies were. Because this is a movie, especially when Indy is in those first couple scenes with his father, where it uses the entire screen as they're facing each other. And so when it was chopped up on TV, they had to cut back and forth between the two of them, one at a time. And it's such a, it was such an obvious example of why it was so worse. And so even at a young age, because when this came out, I was 12 or 13. At that young age, I was fully on board with Letterboxd movies. So anytime there was a movie I loved, I always wanted to watch the Letterboxd version of it on video, which was very difficult to come by back in the day.
Oh, yeah, because we didn't have the same aspect ratio TVs that we have now. 16 by 9 didn't exist. We had 4 by 3, right?
Right. And if you wanted to watch a Letterboxd version of a movie, you couldn't rent it. You had to buy it.
Yes.
For like 2 or 3 times the cost of some specialty movie store like Suncoast.
Yes. Did you find this movie this time, watching it this time, was this movie successful? Did you enjoy it yourself?
It wasn't as good as I remembered it being. I certainly enjoyed it more than Temple of Doom. But watching it more as an adult, there are a few things I realize. George Lucas and Steven Spielberg have no business trying to include female characters in movies.
Yes. Excellent.
The other is Nazis make really great foils.
Sure. Yeah. So, Brother Jay, you don't remember seeing this at all before you said?
I don't remember seeing it. I'm sure that I have seen it. I remembered parts of it vividly, but large parts of it, I don't remember at all. So I've seen it, but I couldn't tell you when or where. It came out in May of 89, and that was before I actually worked at the theater. So it's possible. We might have seen it. No, we might have gone and seen it. We might have gone
ourselves without getting free tickets. I'm sorry, there was a time where we paid for movies during that period.
So I it's possible.
Actually, I think we probably paid. We probably watched, just to interrupt because that's what I do. We actually probably paid for more movies during that period than we've ever paid for movies ever since, even though we went to a ton for free because we were just in movies all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, Jason, did you enjoy yourself this time?
No.
Okay. Well, that's easy enough.
Really missing the mark on the whole reason we're doing this series. Right
I from, I don't know, it just, the start of this movie was so over the top. It was so overacted, and it just, I couldn't.
Right, the River Phoenix start of it?
Yeah.
I prefer to think of it as the Richard Young start of it.
Also, the fact that one of the guys was named Half-Breed probably didn't help.
Well, okay, this movie in the cast, in the credits, Richard Young, his character, who has the iconic jacket and hat that we know is Indiana Jones, he is just called Fedora. And the bad guy in the opening two scenes is just referred to as Panama Hat. So Half-Breed kind of goes along with the whole theme. It's not politically correct, but, you know. We can always insert the Cher song, right? Does she still sing that?
What Cher song?
It's called Half-Breed.
I'm not familiar with such a song.
Oh, listen now.
White man always
Also, there was a guy named Kevork, so...
Yeah.
But they explain the scar on his chin.
They explain everything. Okay, so...
Yeah. That's I think, what I had the hardest problem with. I'm like, I don't need that explanation. You know what would have better served? An actual cohesive plot.
You don't like the fan service first 20 minutes of the movie?
No.
Okay. Because the first 20 minutes was all fan service.
It was way over the top. It was just way too much expectation. It didn't need to be. And it was, I mean, it was way too detailed for no reason. It didn't add any drama at all.
I have a complete 100% reason for all that, I think. Well, first of all, Steven Spielberg is on record saying he made this movie for two reasons. One, to fulfill his 3-movie deal with George Lucas. And two, to atone for the criticism he received from Temple of Doom. Mm-hmm. And he believes this is his favorite Indiana Jones movie. But I know why this movie is the way it is. At least I think I do. This is Steven Spielberg's James Bond movie. There are so many Bond elements in this movie. Not only just actors who have been in Bond movies.
That's true. But
there's every kind of chase scene imaginable. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got a train chase and a boat chase and a plane chase.
Motorcycle.
Yeah, all in the same.
Tank
yeah,
chase.
Yep, yeah, all in the same movie. So, I don't know. I thought the fan service cartoony James Bondness of it all fit the theme. And I thought it was cheesy all the way through. And I agree that the plot, I guess I've never really appreciated that all of the Indiana Jones movies involves like supernatural stuff, but of course they all do.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not an archaeologist as much as an adventurer. He's like the Dresden Files, but for archaeology.
Yeah. I actually quite liked the first part of the movie. I liked River Phoenix. I thought he had a good screen presence. He was good at kind of playing the kid version of Indiana Jones. I thought the it's just a snake moment was great.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious.
I even like the bullwhip thing that explains Harrison Ford's actual scar on his chin.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't need that, but
there was quite a bit of retconning going on.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I liked all of that. It was goofy. It was, I mean, this movie to me was a lot more Yakety Sax than the other movies. Like, very especially much so. The Brody character.
I think the wheels came off the wagon for me at the point where they're in a room where he observes it's full of petroleum and he carries a torch.
I was gonna ask Drew about that. So I know there's a sort of volatility thing. Like liquid petroleum doesn't necessarily burn like gasoline would burn. Right. And gasoline burns mostly because of like volatility, right? Gases.
Mm-hmm.
Like you want to do welding on a gas tank when the gas tank is full of gas. You don't want to weld on a gas tank if the gas tank is empty or has a tiny little amount of gas in it.
Yeah, you are really concerned about vapors, flammable vapors.
Which, in a cave full of, was it bitumen liquidum or whatever crude oil is called.
Sure.
Is that a problem? Vapors?
That'd be a huge problem.
Okay, yeah. So, all right, so it doesn't work. So Jason is right.
Yeah, lighting a torch would make, yeah, it'd be lighting off a bomb.
Plus the fact that his torch is like dripping pieces of fire or burning cloth embers, I guess it would be called, all along the way seems like it would be a bad idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they would be so smelly and sticky and nasty. They would not look like they just like dove underwater in any stretch. Right.
Right. Yeah.
I don't actually know what crude oil feels like. You know what I mean? Like if you have a glass jar full of crude oil, is it like mucky and nasty and stuff?
It depends. There's all different types of crude oil.
Okay.
We produce a really light crude oil at one of our fields that actually isn't even brown. It's almost clear.
Oh. So actually it could look like you just got out of the pool.
It could. You wouldn't smell very good. But I guess we can talk about safety when it comes to pyrotechnics even more in the next movie.
Okay, cool. I've definitely not seen the next movie, so I can't wait.
I have a question that I don't think will spoil the next movie, but I have to know, because at 1 hour 26 minutes in this movie, you know what happened?
What
happened?
The Wilhelm scream.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So is it in the fourth movie?
I bet it is.
Yeah, if he directed it by now, that's one of his trademarks, right?
Let's just say they up the ante in a nuclear way in the next movie.
Ah, okay. So the story opens in Monument Valley, Utah in 1912. A troop of Boy Scouts are exploring the area. One of the scouts, Indiana Jones, River Phoenix, who we know from Sneakers, finds a cave where a party led by a mercenary wearing a fedora, Richard Young, and leather jacket, finds the Cross of Coronado, a priceless Spanish-American artifact. Indy, from his tender age, believes it belongs in a museum, takes it, and is pursued, attempting to escape by horseback. This is yada-yadding a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought, this sets the tone for me for the movie of being sort of goofy. Like, there are hijinks.
Yeah, very goofy. I mean, it's a chase through a circus train.
But even in the very beginning where he's like climbing down the rope and he's tiptoeing to get the cross, and the buffoonish treasure hunters have their backs to him till the very end.
And the Pink Panther theme is playing.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and then it goes on a horse chase followed by a horse chase versus car chase, then train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, train filled with circus animals.
They have that whole he missed the horse because the horse ran away when he tried to jump on it gag.
Yeah.
There were lots of gags in this.
Yes.
That really made my back hurt.
It wasn't necessary.
Pink Panther is a good example. Although I find that I cannot watch the Pink Panther movies.
No.
I think I just too late in life. I discovered them too late. I can't do it. They're not very funny. Also, I tried to watch the Marx Brothers movie Monkey Business, and I gave it my all. I really did. But I just, sorry, can't do it.
How far in did you pull the ripcord?
Halfway through an hour and a half movie. I mean, like, oh. I said, I took it in two chunks. And I didn't, you know, I think my knowledge of the Marx Brothers is only Groucho Marx's radio. So he's, you know, later in life, he was strictly like a very clever, he had a very quick mind and was very witty. And a quick wit, and a little bit, you know, a little bit saucy, I suppose. The rest of the Marx Brothers, for instance, Harpo, I don't get it. Don't get any of it. I'm sure there are a lot of like ethnic jokes in there that I don't understand. Not with Harpo necessarily, but with Zeppo and whatever the fourth guy is. Rodney or whatever, but yeah, it wasn't good. Okay. So sorry, back to Indiana Jones. Yeah. Again, to me, it was a great amount of fan service where ultimately he keeps the cross, even though many times it appears to be, he's going to be,
to his peril.
Yeah. So yeah. So he goes through all of this stuff in a very classic way. Jumps back on his horse, rides back home, where, like all good Indiana Jones movies, we see the main characters from the back first before we ever see them by the face, including, by the way, the fedora mercenary. Great. He tries to show the cross to his father. His father, who has no time for a child and is busy doing scholarly work.
His father's a real dick about it, too.
Yeah. Well, you think a young Indiana Jones probably is, there's a lot of self-created drama to get attention.
Bursting in and using the Wilhelm scream.
So, but then in his, I guess, the equivalent of his living room, the local constabulary comes in, and young Indiana Jones is like, "See, I got this stuff, and look, the bad guys have followed you in the room, so arrest them." And instead, they take the cross from him, and you can't fight City Hall.
Mm-hmm. But he gets a nice pep talk about it.
Oh, he did, yes. The fedora guy says, the quote is, "You lost this time, kid, but you don't have to like it." And he puts a fedora on the kid's head. So Indiana Jones gets his first fedora. Then we change to 1938, aboard a freighter in a violent Atlantic storm. Indy is tracked down this very same cross, but is again confronted by the man in the Panama hat and his henchmen.
Wearing the same clothes.
Wearing the same clothes. And, by the way, I don't know how you felt, and I've never been on a ship during a storm at sea, but it just looked like people were throwing giant buckets of water on them to simulate hitting waves. Maybe this is how it is in real life, and I realize they're doing it all on a soundstage. The practical effects on that particular scene, I've seen better, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, it's no, like, Frankenstein. Sure.
Yeah, okay, yes. So there's some fun stuff where he gets the cross back and serial action. Mm-hmm. And then we return to the Indy we know in his university, where he gives the artifact to Marcus Brody, who is Denholm Elliott, by the way. And interesting piece of trivia, sad piece of trivia, Denholm Elliott, our Yakety Sax character in this movie, he had been diagnosed with AIDS shortly before the filming began and was seriously ill during a lot of production.
No, couldn't tell.
But Indiana Jones is again, something of a rock star on campus. A hit with the young ladies, who he doesn't give any attention to because, of course, they are far too old for him. So he climbs out a window to avoid the throng. After getting a package sent to him from Venice. And then that is where he is greeted by the men in black, or the men in the black sedan. And they deliver him to one Walter Donovan, played by Julian Glover, who, by the way, was in For Your Eyes Only and The Empire Strikes Back. And he's a generous donor to the museum and is an oil magnate whose drilling team has uncovered a fragment of a stone marker dating to the 12th century near Ankara, Turkey. The marker is read by Indy, and to his surprise, it details the cup that holds the blood of Jesus Christ, the Holy Grail, whose waters can grant immortality. Now,
and it's at this point in the movie that I put everything in a British accent in my head.
Well, yeah, I already demonstrated in the first Indiana Jones movie that I'm not going to apply any kind of biblical scholarship to this this little project of ours, since I have nothing to offer, except that I am assured that there really isn't any kind of promise of immortality, except in the sense that you will go to heaven and therefore live immortal. But anyway, knights, crusades, Holy Grail, they have two pieces of the puzzle. Or sorry, they have one piece of the puzzle.
Well, they have like two-thirds of the piece of the puzzle.
And they mentioned that this has been Indiana's father's life's work, right?
Yeah. He initially turns them down on the job because he's not the most qualified. His father's the most qualified.
Right.
Yes. And they said, "Well, we hired your father. He's gone missing." So he's like, okay, motivation. We call that motivation. Donovan's assistant, who was also the assistant of their archaeological leader, or their historical leader, or whatever, James Bond, Sean Connery. Their assistant is Dr. Elsa Schneider, who is Allison Duty, and she played Jenny Flex in A View to a Kill. So we've got Dr. Elsa Schneider, and at first I was going to have another little riff on Ilsa, the she-wolf of the SS, that line of exploitation Nazi movies. We will not be going down that road because we have a different road to go down later. But anyway, so Indiana Jones' dad was the project leader. And so they go to dad's house and find the house is ransacked and his mail open. And Indiana Jones remembers, hey, I got a package from Italy. And he opens it up to find his dad's diary, his entire handwritten book with all of his clues to find the Holy Grail.
Amazing.
Yes. I've also, again, thought about those like partially handwritten books that I love so much. And when Drew, many, many episodes ago, said, why don't you write one? I thought, huh. That's as far as it went. But every time I see something like that, I'm like, hey, there's no reason why I can't write my own Necronomicon.
It's true.
Everything's just made right up, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah.
I mean, so, you should call it something else.
No, yeah. Yes, exactly. I can't call it the Ericnomicon. It's probably not. No,
you should call it that.
Yes, you should.
I don't think so. So Marcus and Indy fly to Venice, where Donovan's arranged apartments for them, and they meet with Schneider, and she gives him a written note by Henry. Henry, by the way, is the father, that contains only the Roman numerals for 3, 7, and 10. And the group goes to where Henry disappeared, the Venice Library, which was once a church in ancient Roman times. And here's where all the clues. And by the way, I did think this was very clever, even though it was heavy-handed. Where in the only lecture you get to hear from Indiana Jones as teacher Indiana to his students is most of archaeology is done in a library, and you're never really out in the field. You're not like a hero, and X never marks the spot.
Yeah, you don't follow maps.
Exactly.
And X never marks the spot.
Yeah. So, of course, this movie, X marks the spot several times, and you're following maps constantly.
Mm-hmm. So it's subtle like a whole bunch of scissors.
It's great.
It's not subtle, but it's funny.
Yeah, I thought it was funny.
And so Denholm Elliott is always the one who's making the high-minded analysis. Like, he's the one that says X marks a spot, and then later he's talking with his old college pal, Henry, about the pen being mightier than the sword.
Yes. Yeah. Those old guys have their own language.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. It's called racism.
Well, there's part of it. I think that's more of a dialect than a sorry, separate language.
Couldn't resist.
No, that's great. So, I mean, it's not great. You know. So, we.
I'm not singling. No, you, I'm not singling anybody out.
You
are on record
now. You just said racism is great.
No, I did not say that. So this leads to Indiana Jones taking basically a big metal pole to a priceless floor of a church/museum, but that's where he finds the cave that leads them down to the tunnel of crude oil.
Yeah, for being an archaeologist and somebody who's concerned with the history and well-being of artifacts, he doesn't have a lot of reverence for history and well-being of artifacts.
Yeah, like marble flooring apparently is exempt from his rules of saving everything. Or jade flooring, maybe. Anyway, so we go down and we get again, another sort of iconic thing where he sees what lays before him and he's like, rats. Not meaning drat, but meaning there are rats.
Willard.
Yes. So we get rats. That's fun. I don't find rats particularly, like, they don't make my skin crawl. I would not be wanting to be in a tunnel with crawling full of rats. Don't get me wrong. But that does not give me the visceral reaction that, say, a large hairy spider might.
You have to return your birthday present now.
Anyway.
So, of the three movies, which was the worst then? The snakes, the bugs, or the rats?
Well, how are you defining? What metric defines worst?
Best.
Most
entertaining.
Most entertaining was probably snakes. But for me, the most, like, creepy crawly is the insects. Insects will get me every time. Insects and eye damage will cause a visceral reaction in me, in one Eric.
Eye damage.
Oh, hey, speaking of which, my recruit
Blade Runner call,
this week, where a mom called for the paramedics because her 11-year-old son had zipped his penis up in his sweatshirt.
His sweatshirt.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, I was like, I turned to my recruit and I was waving, like, do not say anything. Cause we transfer the call and the medics do the talking, but we're still in line. And I'm like, I don't care if we're muted. As long as this call is live, you are not to say anything out loud, because I do not want what we are going to talk about in a moment to be on tape in any way. And then once the call was over, we started talking about, I can't believe that
Franks and Beans.
Yeah. And my female coworkers are like, well, how did that happen? And I'm like, well, you know, young boys, he was probably cleaning it and it went off. Anyway, there was no blood, by the way. I'm sure he was freaked out. But I think a pair of scissors and some sort of compress and the shame will solve his problem. Because, you know.
I have to say, one of the funniest lines I've ever seen in a movie theater that was completely unexpected was...
how do you get the Franks over the beans?
Keith David in a very serious, deep voice saying, what I don't understand is how you got the beans above the Frank.
Yeah. And then there's that flash where you see, they show it just for like a second. Mm-hmm. And then you hear the paramedic say, we got a bleeder. To me, in the theater, that was a fucking amazing moment. That was the much better scene than the hair gel quote scene.
Yes.
Although that was also very clever. That was a crazy movie.
It was. It was, yeah. That was like the pinnacle of Chris Elliott's career.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and it had Matt Dillon with comically large teeth. Mm-hmm. It made everybody more human. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, so sorry, back to Indiana Jones. While Elsa and Indy are in the tunnel full of oil when the rats, Marcus is knocked out by members of a cult and taken away.
In any of these movies, does anybody have any sense of spatial awareness at all?
No, they're singularly focused.
This is the same cult from The Mummy, right?
Probably. See, I thought it was from a David Morrell novel. But they are the Brotherhood of the Cruciform Sword. Descendants of soldiers sworn to protect the Grail with their lives. But we don't know that yet, because we have this very James Bond scene where after they get out of the tunnel full of oil, then they have a chase scene through Venice, which is pure James Bond, that involves boats and a big ships and all sorts of stuff. Witty repartee. Jason, you didn't enjoy this part of it? If this had a James Bond theme in the background, it would have been a highlight of a James Bond movie.
That's a stretch.
I mean, he would have had to, like, knock Elsa out and drag her off the boat for realism in a James Bond movie. Be a different kind of racism.
Different kind of misogyny.
I did appreciate the actor. I have no idea what his name was, but the leader of the Brotherhood of the Cruciform Sword, when Indy is threatening him with death by boat prop, and he's cool as a cucumber. He's just like, my soul is prepared, Dr. Jones, is yours. That was great.
Not only that, but when they let him off on like a little dock along the way, he just stands right up and straightens his suit and marches off. Mm-hmm. If this movie were remade, that character would be played by Jason Mantzoukas.
Oh, see, I was going to say he'd be played by like Ben Stiller. Or, actually, even better than that, Sacha Baron Cohen.
Zooks is cheaper. Just as good. Anyway, so...
I've got a murder boner.
So...
Yeah, so that dude tells him where to find his father.
Yes, which is in the castle Brunwald in Germany. And then after drying out, Indy arranges for Marcus to meet Sala, John Rhys Davies.
By the way, Brunwald?
Yes.
Brown Forest.
Oh, good to know. So, John Rhys Davies from the Living Daylights. They send him to go, Sala and Marcus to go start hunting for the Grail, while he and Elsa go after Henry. And he and Elsa go right up to the castle, I guess, right? And rent a room or something?
He pretends to be a Scottish lord.
Yeah, and then knocks out the employee there, and then but still manages to get himself, I don't know, anyway. Don't worry about
it. You know the lore behind that scene, right?
I do not know that.
Like, if you're a Scottish lord, I'm Mickey Mouse?
I do not know that.
That actor does not say Mickey Mouse.
Oh, what does he say?
He says Jesse Owens. if you go back and look, the lips don't match the words.
What a strange and specific piece of racism.
Yes. Yeah, apparently that went too far.
I mean, if you want to, you know, skewer the Germans, that it is a way, that is one way to go.
Yep.
Oh my. Wow. Yeah. So anyway, while Elsa's taking a shower or something, getting ready, Indy finds that his room and Elsa's room have been ransacked by men looking for the Grail diary, making him all more determined to find Henry and also the Grail.
And also makes both of them super horny.
Yes. Actually, sorry. The ransacking happens, I think, while they're still in Venice. And then they go to the castle. And they find Henry. He's locked up in the castle. But both of them are, and by the way, I know I'm yada-yadding some action scenes that are kind of fun. A little bit of vine swinging. But turns out Elsa has double-crossed
them. Some good whip work.
Yes. Elsa is something of a vixen. And she has double-crossed them both. And to their men, it says in the synopsis from IMDb, and to both men's horror, they find that the string puller in this whole affair is Walter Donovan, the man who wants the ancient cup to give him immortality. I'm going to interject that they were both more horrified when they find out that Elsa's been pulling both of their strings.
Literally.
Literally, yes.
I think it goes something like, I am as human as the next man. I was the next man.
Yes. There's a lot of this funny like father-son dialogue that actually, was it Tom Stoppard is his name? Went and did a bunch of like rewrite punch-up on that kind of dialogue to try to get the father-son dynamic a little bit bitter, but not dark and not taking away from the whole, you know, because a lot of the father-son stuff is for humor as well.
I was going to say, in true Disney fashion of murdering the mother.
Yeah, well, Steven Spielberg has his own father issues, so.
Murdering the mother and having an absentee father.
Yeah. So, this is yakety-sax level of peril, where they are both tied to a chair, and then there's some shenanigans that catches the room on fire, and there's some further shenanigans where they are there's some sort of revolving hidden door in a fireplace that leads to the Nazis. And anyway, blah, 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 blah. Very cheesy, very over the top. But you get the line where when they discover it, Harrison Ford looks to Elsa and says, "Nazis. I hate those guys." Mm-hmm. Earlier, by the way, when they're in the oil tunnel, they see something about the Ark of the Covenant. And she's like, "Are you sure that's Ark of the Covenant?" And Harrison Ford is like, "Yeah, I'm pretty sure." So blah blah blah. They escape out of the castle, and we think we're gonna have another boat chase, but no, now it's a motorcycle chase.
Little bit of misdirection.
Yes, and the motorcycle chase is fine. It's very cute having Sean Connery in his little tweed outfit in the sidecar.
Here's the thing, though: they made that whole point of having the diversion with the boat. Why wouldn't they have waited a little longer?
Well, there's that. Yeah, I saw that. Like, they could have at least waited until the Germans were on the other boat out a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they had one foot on dry land still, so you're right.
Not the greatest strategies.
Well, remember,
he's an archaeologist, not a tactician.
Exactly. So they escape. Oh, Elsa, by the way, has gotten the book, and she's going back to Berlin because she is summoned there by the highest level. So when they escape, they want to go to back to Venice.
Nazi schmatzy.
Yes, but instead, Father Jones, I guess, says he wants to go to Berlin because he's got to get that book back. And they're like, why is the book so important? Well, because, you know, it also gives you all the secret steps you have to do once you find the place where the Holy Grail is.
It's basically the villain that gives away the whole plot of the Bond movie.
Yes. Yeah. So then they go to Nazi Berlin, which, I don't know. Did you like the scene?
The scene with Adolf Hitler?
Yeah, the whole book burning thing. I thought it was pretty great. I mean, it was very, like, cinematic. It was beautiful. In its, you know, obviously.
Yeah, but the whole plot with Elsa, it was awful.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't bother me when I was little, but watching it now, it's like, it makes no sense. There's no reason that Indy should trust her.
No.
Or be sympathetic towards her at all.
And I know that we talked about Harrison Ford and Kate Capshaw having no real chemistry. Mm-hmm. I didn't see a lot of chemistry between Indy and Elsa either.
No.
Which I guess is why you said that they have no right to include women.
Yes.
The Bechdel test should not apply to Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. So, we go to Berlin, we see the book burning, there's Hitler, he signs the book, it's pretty funny. And then they go to the Flughafen.
Yeah, Flughafen, but I think actually it's called Flugzeug, but whatever.
Yeah,
exactly. They called it Flughafen in the movie.
The airport, I guess.
Yes.
Where they book tickets to board a dirigible. And so we think we're going to have a dirigible chase, but it turns out we're going to have a biplane chase.
This is the movie that taught me the whole nomenclature of using the clock to give directions.
Oh yes. Ah, good. Yeah. By the way, because I'm not quite of the age when I turn on the History Channel to watch about Nazis on purpose, someday, I guess it's coming for all of us, I just recently learned that the Germans put, you know, the sound of the German planes is very distinctive. Like the dive bombers especially have that very like siren rumble quality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's on purpose. Like they put like whistles and stuff to make it sound like death from above, scary stuff. Which is, to me, that sounds particularly Nazi-ish. Like, how can we make it even scarier than dropping bombs? We're going to warn you we're coming by making spooky sounds. But it works.
No, I mean, yeah, mental tactics are, you know, in war, right?
Oh, it's ingenious.
Playing Warrant outside, you know, Manuel Noriega's prison cell over and over and over again, so... Yeah, I'm always, when we talk about Nazis, when there's this...
In our weekly meeting where we talk about Nazis.
I'm always horrified.
I need a haircut.
What?
Just move on.
Not too close. Not
move
too
on. Close. Yeah.
Okay. I'm always horrified to
actually,
look back
at my...
I know
why Jason doesn't understand that, but never mind.
Oh. Not nice.
For some, it's not a choice. I'm just saying. Okay, so go ahead.
Are you done?
I am done.
Okay. Sorry, I ate a piece of chocolate.
I would say chew into the microphone, please. Do that more.
Couldn't help it. I'm trying to keep myself awake.
It's okay. No, and I made a skinhead joke at your expense, so go ahead.
Oh, yeah. It's like 90 degrees in this room, and I haven't turned the air conditioning on yet because I haven't checked it. For the season, I digress. I always worry that somebody's going to stumble across my Audible book list and think I'm some kind of weird Nazi sympathizer because I have like 15 books in there on Berlin and World War II and Hitler. So,
yeah, I'm having similar issues with my Audible list, partly because I bought a lot of kids' books on my Audible list. But as it turns out, I don't really want Journey to have access to all of the books I've bought on Audible.
Oh.
And Audible does not make it easy to do that. You can't make a curated list for your family members.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I'm going to have to give Journey her own account to solve that problem.
I don't know if you guys noticed. I'm not in Willow tonight, but when I am at Willow, my background is some built-in bookshelves. Mm-hmm. And I've taken most of my books from Anchorage out to Willow. So they're full of books. I just kind of threw them up there. I didn't think about it. One of the books is The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. Which is, you know, sort of the seminal history of Nazi Germany and what led to their downfall.
And a famous piece of literature.
Yes. And not at all a positive, a pro-Nazi book. The problem is, now that I'm working from home, from Willow mostly, and I have a bunch of Zoom meetings, you can see my bookshelf in the background, but you can't really see what's there except for this prominent swastika.
Yes. Yeah, that's troubling.
So, yeah, so I actually have started to just cover that book up.
Yeah, probably a good idea. That's fascinating. Yeah, because you wouldn't even think about
having that book.
Exactly. You would never even think about it.
No, but
all it would be is one still image of you with the swastika in the background.
You accidentally like raising your hand in the middle of a frame, frozen. Yeah.
Hold on, I'll be right back.
I'm adjusting my microphone or my webcam.
Oh.
Hold on.
Oh, dear. Okay. Yeah, that's an HR visit you don't want to have, even remotely.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, not a good look.
No. Sorry, we skipped a little bit. We got Hitler signing the thing. We got the book back. And we got the dirigible. And then we have the plane, sorry. And we have the plane fight. And we have the
seagull fight.
Yeah, the plane tunnel chase. By the way, think high anxiety. And, yeah, so that's fun. And then they go to the desert area of Jordan, where Indy and Henry rendezvous with, Sala and learn that Marcus has been, kidnapped by the Nazis. And he has a copy of that map that they were looking for. The map that tells you how to get to the, X on the spot. Yeah, so they end up seeing, like, Donovan and the whole crew taking Brody in a World War I German tank as part of the convoy.
Makes total sense.
Yeah, so we have a World War I tank chase scene, which is pretty great, actually. Looks good. It's a very, like, distinct vehicle, kind of Star Warsian.
Really long scene, way longer than I remembered.
Yeah, perhaps longer than it should have been.
Probably, but
it was also apparently it was a little bit of a bear to film. Like they plotted out 2 days for it, but it ended up taking like 8 days. Partly because the tank moved so slowly that they had to figure out how to make it look faster. Like if Harrison Ford's on a horse and the tank doesn't move very fast, you kind of have to figure that one out. So.
It was like 7 miles an hour, right?
Something like that. Yeah, it's not super fast. But we see we get a Wilhelm scream. We get comically bad Nazi guys that should have been out of a Wolfenstein video game, like minor boss level or something. Oh, by the way, we have this whole scene on the cliff, and it's supposed to be a touching moment, blah, blah, blah. Plenty of fun.
Harrison Ford is doing some work.
Yeah, he was. It turns out, okay, Harrison Ford is freaking charming. Mm-hmm. He's a great screen presence. Sean Connery is freaking charming. He's a great screen presence. I wouldn't want to date him, but...
What?
everybody. I mean, I guess Denholm Elliott. Yeah, he was fun. Jonathan Rhys-Meyers or whatever. He's also charismatic. Nobody else though in this movie. Everybody else is like made out of like paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Nazis.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that's good. I mean, it's good to have the Nazis because it's fun to hate on the Nazis.
That's the first time this sentence has ever been uttered on this podcast.
No, I mean, the Nazis serve a purpose.
It's good to have the Nazis.
So you're in favor of racism and you think it's good to have Nazis around.
No, no.
Are you going to open a wing restaurant?
Context?
Phrasing.
Yeah. These days, it's easier to hate the Nazis than it is to hate, I don't know, the Chinese. Even the NBA players will tell you that. So, what's the name of the basketball player that touched all the microphones?
Our president disagrees with you. Rudy Gobert.
Okay. I guess his one of his teammates who has been like sort of quarantined together with him was not a happy deal. Apparently, their relationship will not be saved.
Yeah, because his teammate also tested positive.
Yes, yes, yes. They're quarantined basically together and of course, this is what, not that, but basically the NBA shutting down the season is kind of what started this whole dramatic, everybody taking it real.
Yeah, so Rudy Gobert, hero.
Yes. And simultaneous biggest jerk ever. Like, worst piece of physical comedy. Now, it's hard to criticize him because you've heard my level of comedy on this program, at least. I could see, in a moment of fancy, being silly and irreverent.
Well, that was the same day that Tom Hanks was diagnosed, right?
Yes, I think so, yeah. So, we end up, okay, so the very last thing, which is total video game, by the way. I mean, especially the first part of it with the blades and the riddles and stuff. The blades especially. What the hell is that? That was ridiculous. That was right out of that's right out of one of those Japanese cartoons.
Again, that's a set piece in search of a scene.
Yes.
Yeah, the blades was not executed well. The effect was poor. But I love the spirit of this type of thing. I love the exploring. That's my favorite part of Indiana Jones. The exploring and the booby traps. I love all that stuff. I love it.
Well, this was for you.
It was.
Yeah.
The leap of faith was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, it looked great. Yeah, the leap of faith looked great. It was ridiculous, but it looked great. Yeah. And then, of course, when you get the knight, who were they going to ask to be the knight? I forget. Was it John Gielgud? No, Laurence Olivier. It was Laurence Olivier they were going to have play the knight, but he was too old. And I think he actually died just after the premiere of this movie. So he was a little frail to be the knight. Although the knight didn't have like a very physical part.
No, but it was good.
Yeah. Well, was it? I mean, I don't know.
It was anticlimactic.
No, no, no. The end in 2020, the fucking end is the best. like the end of this movie in 2020, if we were sitting in a theater and we watched this movie, we would look at each other and say, "For fuck's sake!" Yeah. Because, and I will let you give it away, Jason, but what is at the end of this movie?
What, are you referring to the line?
Oh, the situation followed by the line, yeah. Just the character.
Yeah. The whole Elsa let it go.
Yeah, Elsa dies because she can't let it go. Let it go. Elsa can't let it go. Dies.
I don't know. I got nothing. I was jammed in neutral from that point forward. I was done.
I think I audibly gasped. I really did.
Well, that's why I texted you. I think I was like, I think I said, yes. Like, what the actual fuck?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Yeah.
Drew, did you have the same reaction?
I found it a bit ironic in this day and age, but I didn't have the same kind of visceral reaction that you two seem to have from it. It
hit me in the viscera.
The part that offended me was not the kind of funny Easter egg-y kind of reference to Frozen. More so that her character never made any sense in the entire movie, especially at the end. She believed in the supernatural enough to tell Donovan to use the wrong cup because she was certain something bad was going to happen to him. But she didn't believe the knight when he said the cup can't cross the seal. It made no sense. And she had not shown like that level of obsession to the point of clouding her judgment before. It didn't make any sense to me. That's the part that offended me. It made no sense.
And were we to believe that the cup itself had some sort of alluring quality, that's why Indiana Jones was also kind of tempted to try to grab it at the very end? Or it just, he happened to be in the same situation, thought that Dad could hold him because Dad now had drunk from the cup?
Yeah, I think he wanted to please his father.
And the best way to please your father is let it go. Jesus, get over it, kid. I was a great dad. Taught you how to fend for yourself. By the way, somewhere along the line, somebody asked River Phoenix if he prepared for playing young Indiana Jones by watching Raiders of the Lost Ark or whatever. And he's like, no, I prepared by watching Harrison Ford between scenes. I acted like Harrison Ford. Just pretty fun. So River Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
You know, he's one of those bright, shining stars.
Briefly.
I haven't seen My Private Idaho. I've seen Stand By Me. But was he that good? Or was it just the tragedy of a young, talented actor from a weirdo family?
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think of his performance in Sneakers?
It was good.
So, yeah, I think fine. he was a good actor who had a potential for greatness, and unfortunately didn't make it. So, what can you say?
I thought he was great in Sneakers. I mean, think about who he was up against acting.
Well, okay, and yes, he held his own.
He held his own. He did a great job. Yeah, I think every role you mention him in, I think he does a really great job.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know where my question is coming from. His brother Leif, though, is a fucking, interesting character.
Yes.
Yeah, he is probably just as crazy as that rest of that whole family.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, but at least he's not that guy with the fucked up face anymore. He just has a big old beard and acts weird. I'm sorry, you're not familiar with Joaquin Phoenix. Used to be Leif Phoenix, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I did not know that.
Credited as Leif Phoenix in Parenthood, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah, because there's Leif. There's Summer Phoenix. Does she still go by Summer? I think so. Yeah. All the Phoenicians have weirdo hippie names because they had weirdo hippie parents. Mm-hmm. And don't tell me, don't get me wrong. Joaquin Phoenix is an amazing actor, but I wouldn't want to spend any time in the same area code as he's in, though. Seems like it would be trouble. He and Shia LaBeouf would just are the worst. And we'll be talking about Shia LaBeouf next week, I believe.
I see. You might as well just throw your hatred of James Franco in there, too.
It's funny. I've softened on James Franco.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's just a goofball.
Indiana Jones overall has softened you on people who like to prey on teenage girls.
Okay. Yes, there's that. I'm sorry. You're right. I forgot about that whole aspect of James Franco, but yeah. Well, you know, who is it? Who's the famous guy who just basically endorsed Woody Allen. God, I forget. Who was it? Somebody famous.
Roman Polanski?
No. It was,
sorry. It's a bad joke.
Some old guy, old, who was like, hey, you know, he's not so bad. Read it. Oh, Larry David. That's what it was. Larry David's like, yeah, I read his book. It's great. it makes the Sunni thing make complete sense. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what a good piece of work does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Propaganda works.
Yeah.
Just ask China and their one-child policy.
As just so saccharine sweet, it offends me. The John Lovett, Ronan Farrow relationship. It's, you can't go, you can't side with Woody Allen on any issue.
What is the John Lovett, Ronan Farrow relationship?
John Lovett's not from,
not the Saturday Night Live guy.
Not the Saturday Night Live guy, but the former speechwriter, I think, for Obama. He and Ronan Farrow are engaged, I think. And so the podcast Love It or Leave It, which is actually pretty good, very clever guy, John Lovett says, although he wants to also be a stand-up comedian and he tells the lamest jokes, but he does have really good guests. But unfortunately, he and Ronan Farrow are again, like, cloyingly sweet as they couple. That's all. I'd recommend you listening to Pod Save America, maybe an episode just before the pandemic where he's actually live and he'll talk about Ronan. He'll sometimes has Ronan as a guest. He'll mention Ronan. He was mentioned in Ronan's book.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. Well, you know, you write about what you know, right?
No, I'm not. I wasn't a criticism. I'm just saying it was. That's how I know of him, is from the book.
Yeah. And you know, good for them, but it is kind of sickening. Like, young love is ridiculous.
It just took me a while to figure out who his... I realized who his parents were.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, let it go, Elsa. Let it go. If she could just let it go, she would have lived. She would have survived this movie. Still been a Nazi, although...
You know, it took me a while to figure out what you meant by being Rickrolled, but once it clicked, that's actually a very, very funny description. So bravo to you. That was a true joke grenade.
Thank you. Anyway, so Brother Jay, any notes?
Nope, that was all of them.
Okay. What's your verdict?
I think I gave the last one a D. I'm going to give this one a D. Okay. It was no better, was no worse. It was forgettable. I don't know. I didn't enjoy it.
That's a shame. Next week will be better.
define the logic underlying that conclusion.
Say, Brother Drew, was it worth it?
It was worth it. I really like this movie. I mean, when I was younger, I loved this movie. So there's certainly some nostalgia associated with it for me. But I liked it. It was a lot more lighthearted and more fun than the Temple of Doom. I really like the chemistry between Harrison Ford and Sean Connery. I thought they did a great job as father and son. I liked you call them the video gamey aspects. But I liked the chase for the Holy Grail. You know, some of it went on too long, but again, you would characterize this movie as being kind of a Bond ripoff, and I don't think that's a bad thing in this context. It's sort of a period piece Bond movie. Yeah, it was fun. Lots of different action set pieces. Very creative. There's a giant blimp. I mean, come on. This was a fun, lighthearted movie.
I'm going to agree there. I think it's, to me, it's not a great piece of cinema necessarily. Although, again, it's Steven Spielberg makes beautiful movies visually, but or whoever his cinematographer is. Yeah, it's, you know, it's goofy, it's fun, and it's definitely the tone matched the first movie much better. And it was so much different tone than the second movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact that at the end Elsa couldn't let it go just made me both shocked and happy, because, you know, things like that almost makes you believe in God. Almost. Yeah, and so I actually recommend it, by the way. It's you could do worse with 2 hours and 7 minutes or whatever. It's fine. Moves along. Lots of chase scenes. You'll be happy. I mean, you know, don't look at it too closely. So, onto housekeeping.
Just before we go, I think the hardest part for me was when they were in the library and Indy is on the upper level looking down at the X. And when the camera pans to see over his shoulder, you can see the books on the shelves are just all fake.
Well, don't look very closely at the seagulls.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the seagulls on the beach are just like feathers on a stick.
Well, the next scene after the looking down at the X when he's about to break through it, the X is gone on the floor.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
actually, you can still see it. It's just a shade off.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it was sharpied out.
Ah.
Well, I think the implication. Oh, I can't believe I'm discussing this. I think the implication was that you can't see it from below because the color blends in, but when you're looking from above, the light makes it stand out.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, way to defend this movie. I knew you loved it.
Yeah, you know what? After your analysis, I think it was much more... No, sorry. after the analysis you provided, it's actually a much more thinky movie than I thought it was going to be. After your analysis, I don't know what you get with it. Stones. It's not great. Here, while I'm thinking of it.
Really a pee joke, huh?
Yeah, well, what can you do?
Low-hanging fruit.
So let's play our, I forget what the product is called. The medical industrial cleaner. Santa something for. Did you not listen to last week's episode? I put in the housekeeping theme song, and it was a theme song for a medical... spray cleaner product. No, you didn't.
I have not listened to last week's
episode. I listened, I thought.
I am a housekeeper in a hospital in town. I need the best solutions so my work can be done. Blood and urine stains are on the ceiling and the floor. I need some Sandy Master for.
Anyway, it talks about, you know, if there's blood on the walls, you can get it up with, like, something. I forget what it's called. Santa something four is what it's called.
I listened to it.
It's okay. Right. Anyway, so housekeeping. So the people, we have to wear masks at work now because of our the global pandemic and the possibility that some of us have been exposed and we can't work from home.
let's stamp this. We are recording this on Good Friday. April 10th,
2020.
Yeah.
And last week I was worried that this week was going to be a bad week. I think maybe next week might be a worse week for my hometown of Anchorage, but we'll see. It certainly feels more real now that we are wearing masks at work. And we sent all of our trainees home indefinitely because, you know, no reason to. Plus, actually, training is already breaks the social distancing rule. Because you can't do it from farther than 6 feet away. But anyway, so
while you're working, are you spread out at least 6 feet from your coworkers?
Well, we are at the station. At the EOC, it's harder because it's a lot smaller down there. But yeah, we are. But we try. We definitely try. And we're certainly scrubbing everything down, and we've got the taking temperatures and stuff. But
speaking of painful swabs.
Hey, I don't spend a fortune on my hair, but swab makes me feel like I do. No, not makes me look like I don't. Beep. I can't believe I had to look up the Ogilvy Home Perm ads. I did not remember them, as it turns out.
When you looked them up, did you remember them?
Nope. It was great. I mean, it makes sense. Yeah. I remember the brand, but I don't remember any of the ads, actually.
Oh, it's funny, because Drew and I, at least, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, Drew, but I vividly remember the ads.
Yeah. Drew brought it up.
The hot oil treatment.
Yeah.
Well, I remember Formula VO5.
That was different.
No, I know. I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Have I shared my painful swab story?
No.
No.
Oh, great. I'll let you decide whether you want to keep this in or not.
But I have your approval if I decide so.
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay.
When I was in college, I was it was when I was in grad school, so I think I had I was 22. I think I had four more months to be on mom and dad's medical insurance. And then there was going to be a period of time while I was finishing up school, but before I got a real job, that I would not have any medical insurance. And right around that time, I got this really hard mass that I started feeling. I'm pointing, but you can't see. Sort of on my pelvis, sort of right to the inside of my right hip. And it was weird. I couldn't figure out what it was, but it's starting to freak me out just because it's 22. But if I was gonna have cancer, this is not a good time to have cancer. So
wow,
no medical insurance.
A B Z, that's where you veered off to.
Well, you know, I am a child of our parents.
Oh no, that's, I think, yeah. if that's not a normal human response, it's because it's a normal Anderson response.
Well, and I'd never had anything like that before, because it just kind of appeared out of nowhere, and it was it felt weird and alien, and I went to the.
I'm not a doctor, but lumps is bad.
yeah. So I went to the local clinic on campus, and saw a doctor. This is a doctor who I'd had a little bit of a history with. Didn't like him.
Oh, wait. I know what the doctor said. And yeah? You know what the doctor said. What did the doctor say?
What?
No more monkeys jumping on the bed.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. You know, this is the second time in 3 days I told that joke, and it turns out it does not work.
No.
It derails somebody's medical story, which turns out is not great for drama either.
No. But he was poking around with me, and his reaction was like, huh, that's weird. I'm like, oh, thanks. Thanks, doctor. You're really alleviating my anxiety. And he was going through a couple things that it could be that he wanted to rule out before he sent me for a surgical consult where they would actually take a biopsy of it. And one of the things he wanted to rule out was chlamydia.
Oh, no.
That's a very different kind of swab.
Yeah, I was like, that doesn't, I cannot imagine I have chlamydia. I'd had a long time girlfriend, been in a monogamous relationship for years. And he just gave me this kind of look like, yeah, you're a college kid. I'm sure that's not true. I was like, I was young. So at that point,
it's like, I don't know your whore girlfriend.
Yeah. I was a young man and still respected authority figures a little bit at that point. So I was like, okay, I'll just do whatever the doctor tells me. And I was like, all right, you want to rule out chlamydia? Fine, go for it. What I didn't know I was agreeing to was
the punishment.
Yeah. So
is it like a sounding procedure?
Yes.
No. It's
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
So I thought he was going to take some blood or something.
No. It's like a bottle brush cleaner.
Yeah. Yeah. He pulled out the swab, and I don't have to tell you where the swab went, right?
It's exquisitely painful.
Yes, it is. And I was not expecting it. And he started manipulating a part of my body I was not expecting. And then he said, this is going to be uncomfortable.
Yes.
And boy, did he undersell that.
Yes.
And it went so far up that
yes.
I I was going to throw up. And then he was done. And I was like, so like, I felt so violated and I was so angry and upset. Like I didn't want to talk, and so in pain, I didn't want to talk to him. I was like, fuck this. I'm getting out of here. And he's like trying to talk to me about, so like, if it comes back positive, this is what we, and now I'm like really pissed off. I was like, it's not going to fucking come back positive. This makes no sense. I can't believe you just said that to me. But I pretty much just like stormed out, and the nurse was trying to tell me that I need to bring my girlfriend in to get checked. I was like, it was all fucking chlamydia. God damn it. But yeah, I was beside myself with anger about the whole thing.
Did you pee pink for a couple days?
Yeah, I think I did, actually. It was It was not. It's not great, Bob. Not great at all. The best part is the nurse who worked there, who was telling me I needed to bring my girlfriend in. And I was like, you don't know my girlfriend. She was the wife of one of my graduate professors.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. And I was like, oh, I know what you guys are talking about tonight, motherfuckers. But yeah, I was so upset. And eventually, I still had it like a year that long. Of course, I did not have chlamydia. Thanks for those oh, test results.
Hold on, I'm gonna put a pin in chlamydia because I got a question. But go ahead.
I still had that lump like a year and a half later when I got my first job and got real medical insurance, and went to a doctor up here and got the same reaction. By the way, not the chlamydia, but the huh, that's weird. But his take on it was, it doesn't really appear to be anything, and it hadn't gotten bigger that I had determined. So he said, you know, that we'll keep an eye on it, and if it doesn't get any bigger, it's probably not a thing, and if it's not, it should go away over time. And it did. It turned out to be fine.
Hmm.
But at least I have that experience in my life.
Like, well,
the, so angry. It was one of those things. Like, I got home, and I was really angry and upset. And my girlfriend, now my wife, wanted me to tell her
he was not a whore.
Right.
For the record.
Yeah, so I will put that on the record. No worries. Wanted to know why I was so upset. I was so mad and embarrassed. I didn't even want to talk about it. Which, of course, if you're in a relationship, you know, when you don't want to talk about something, that is just going to encourage your partner to want you to talk about it nonstop. So yeah, that didn't go over well. And then once I eventually told her, she got super pissed off, and like, she has the best temper. So yeah. Anyway.
So a question, perhaps, you know, the answer to this, Jason. Because you have some medical background, not because...
Well,
because
I work for the public health department and we have an STD clinic.
Okay, what is the treatment for chlamydia?
So, generally, they're going to give you a gram of azithromycin.
Okay.
I realize that
could cause, like, C. diff, I guess, is one of the things that it could
not,
be,
maybe. Not usually from azith.
So I'm like, well, then, you know what? Don't swab me. Give me the treatment for chlamydia.
Azith is super benign, and it's really well tolerated. The worst thing that azithromycin is going to do to you is you're going to have like terrible diarrhea for a week, but usually doesn't result in C. diff.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Some people who are not good with azith, then they get put on doxycycline instead. And doxycycline is like super uncomfortable, bad for the stomach. It's just, it's its own punishment. But what I was actually going to say anecdotally, like, yes, the treatment the diagnosis of chlamydia requires a swab like that, which is, it is like having a giant bottle cleaner shoved up to your prostate. It is probably I would say it's got to be up there with like kidney stone pain. But working around doctors and providers who, actually this wasn't at the STD clinic, but this was another clinic I worked at. So gonorrhea, the treatment for gonorrhea is, a intramuscular injection of ceftriaxone. And I'm sure neither of you have ever had an injection of ceftriaxone, but it is so painful that it can actually lay somebody out. It hurts so bad. But some other providers feel that's the proper application because it's
a syntax.
Yes.
It's even worse.
Yeah.
I'm going to cause you pain and feel righteous about it.
Yes. So,
By the way, I 100% think that's what was going on with this doctor.
Yes. It absolutely was. Because if he really thought that you, if he suspected it and didn't think you were telling the truth, he would have just probably, it would have been easier for him to just give you the medication and be like, go get it taken care of. If he was a good provider, but clearly he was just trying to bilk the billing. Because that's extra, you know, those lab tests.
He's going through his normal protocol, and he has to rule out these things. So I've got a funny lump in my abdomen. I'm going to shove a stick right in your urethra all the way up into your yum-yums, and then you're going to pull it out, and it's going to be,
Yeah, it's really like the,
That experience did teach me a valuable lesson. Like, ever since then, I have never just like taken advice or instruction without a thorough questioning and analysis of what was going to happen.
Yes,
and what the alternatives would be, and you know every possible scenario. So I'm sure I've become somewhat of a nightmare patient after that. But I am fully willing to engage in a discourse with my medical providers now instead of just saying, okay, whatever you think. So that's actually a valuable lesson I learned.
Well, that's actually that's really good from a patient advocacy standpoint, because a lot of patients just go along with the flow, and that's not always a good thing. No pun intended.
Yeah, I found that out at a young, early age.
But by the way, there is a similar test when they're testing you for chlamydia in the rectum. So, and it is just as uncomfortable as you would expect.
Yeah,
damn near killed him.
So,
yeah,
bigger brush.
It's a Brillo pad.
Yeah. So up to you, brother E.
Oh no! This is gold. This is podcast gold. During times of pandemic, this is the best. Kids, there's no kids listening. Kids, one of the reasons why you want to take all sorts of barrier methods when you have sexual intercourse, especially with somebody you don't know the history of, let's say, is because one of the consequences is you can get a disease that, while it will not kill you, it is probably in and of itself uncomfortable, but the test is not something you want to go through. Unless you are very familiar with a very small corner of the video store.
Yeah.
In which case, go nuts.
It's funny. I'm sure you guys know people who are, they are so obsessed with where they went to school. And they're still like emotionally invested in the sports teams and what's going on. They pay
money through the alumni association.
Yes. Maybe even want to send their children there.
Yes.
I do not have that feeling.
You were one swab away from being an alumni association member?
Maybe, yeah. Because I had an amazing experience at that university, and I got a fantastic education that really set me up for success in life. But that is one of the first things I think about when I think back to my school experience. I've even had conversations with my wife where she's like, would we ever let our daughters go to that school? One, no, because it's like 80% male. And two, no, because of that medical clinic.
That's hilarious.
You know, they're not going to avoid boys their whole lives. You're not going to be able to accomplish that.
That I understand that, but yeah. I don't need to put them in a situation where they are the extreme minority.
I hate to point this out, but you realize it's going to come full circle when they do go to college and they have a roommate that you don't know about.
I'm not sure what you're trying to accomplish.
There's so many things coming that even listing them alphabetically, college is not the first thing I'm worried about.
Yeah.
Well, as of this point, I still have a basement. So, but
excellent. But
probably not much longer. So,
well, I definitely feel for you there. This does not seem like it's going to be a very fun period in the Brother J household.
Wait, what's happening to your basement?
I'm losing the house.
Oh.
The landlord's happening now. It's not for sure, because of course they've shut down all the real estate right now, so you can't sell anything. I couldn't get an appraiser to come to the house anyway. So I can't. I talked to a mortgage broker, but that's on hold because of course nobody's moving any paper right now. So the banks aren't issuing loans unless you are like sterling credit and have a ton of down money. So that's, you know, and the real estate market's started to shrink here a little bit money wise. So I'm not going to pay premium price for a property that, I mean, the bank wouldn't mortgage that anyway. It'd be too much liability. So, I'm not going to overpay for a property. So the reality is that I'll either have to call their bluff and say, I'm not paying that much for the property. So do what you need to do. If you need to give me notice, then I have 3 months notice and you can pay me the $5,000 and, we will go look, you know, we'll go look for someplace else to live.
Yeah.
Now that is miserable.
Well, especially because, you know, I haven't been able to sell Derek's tools yet because I have, like, we just got the okay from the attorney to do so. And so we were going to start doing that. Well, I can't have people over to the house now to look at stuff.
Oh, no.
So if I move, I have to move all of this garage full of stuff that I don't want to keep. So it's just going to be a problem. It's just going to be a nightmare. So I don't know. And we're looking at houses. We're looking at all kinds of options. You know, looking at Vancouver, which would be a really life change for me because I'm not used to having to commute, but, I can get more house for less money and actually be in a better neighborhood and be in a place where my insurance will be probably, you know, 25 to 30% cheaper because I'm in a better area. So there are some, you know, the drawback is I'll still pay Oregon income tax, even though I'm a resident of Washington, and Washington has sales tax and, you know, there's all kinds of little things, but, so I don't know, it's going to be what it is, but, I haven't gotten the notice in writing yet from the landlord. So at least as of right now, they have to give me 90 days notice. So, and because I've been a long-term tenant, they have to, if it was a one-bedroom house, they have to give me $1,500. If it's a two-bedroom house, they have to give me $3,000. And if it's a three-bedroom or bigger house, they have to give $4,500 for relocation assistance and deposit assistance.
For if they kick you out to sell it?
If they're evicting me. For no cause.
For any reason?
For no cause.
Oh, okay. Do you have like a long-term lease? Is that,
No.
Are you like month to month?
We're month to month now.
Okay.
So we're not on a lease, but, if they evicted me for some cause, then that would be the exception. But, evicting me without cause, then the city requires that they pay.
Wow.
Because if there's no cause, then there's no, you know, there's,
that solve a discrimination problem? Is that what that's avoiding?
It slowed down a little bit of the rental market jacking prices up every 2 months on people so that they could price people out.
Because do you have any kind of rent control or anything?
Portland only allows, you can only raise rent so much in a year period. So you can't, year over year, you can't increase over so much over the previous year.
No matter who's living there, or if you have a vacancy,
the same tenant. If you have the vacancy, you can up it. But
then you can reprice everything, yeah.
Right. But if you have a current tenant, I think there is some percentage. But yeah, you can't.
So that makes sense. So if you've got a property you think could be renting for a ton more than it is right now, then you're discouraged because you're going to have to buy them out, basically, right?
Well, and here's the other thing. Like, this house has got 20 years of wear and tear, and they have put, with the exception of the roof, the new roof that they put on, like, the first year we lived here, which they had their friend do, so the quality is suspect at best. The roof is 20 years old. It needs replacing. The furnace is 20 years old. It needs replacing. The hot water heater is 20 years old. It needs replacing. The refrigerator is 20 years old. It will need replacing. The hardwood floors are going to need refinished. There's going to need to be some paint in some places. The pipes are plastic and they're getting kind of, gunky with iron and residue. The house siding probably needs to be painted at the very least. So there's tons of money that they're going to have to put in this place to sell it. Unless somebody's just going to buy it and bulldoze it. So, which I don't think the city will let them do. So the landlords aren't in a strong position. And if we just up and move out, they're not going to be able to rent it. So, they're going to have to put money into it before they can rent it or sell it. So I'm like, there. Yeah. So anyway, because they jacked up the price after they gave us a price. So like, nope. Besides, again, I don't think I could get a mortgage for what they want because I don't think it's worth what they want. Mm-hmm. And I understand that they want, they want to come out way ahead, but it's not off of my back. And also, I've been here 20 years. So it isn't like we haven't paid a crap ton to live here. So,
and it's not like you don't know what you're getting.
Yeah. Well, then exactly. That's the thing. I know there's a leak in the foundation. I know that there's termite damage. Like, I know all these things. So it's not like, when the appraiser comes through, I know all of these things. And I will be very honest with the appraiser, like, the air conditioning unit will leave with us. Like, that is not theirs. It is mine. And it will go with me. If I have to fucking let the Freon into the atmosphere, I will do it.
I'm going to guess Drew's going to suggest you don't lean on that part of it.
No, I'm not going to. I wouldn't say that. But I'm just saying, there's lots of things.
Well, Drew's got a friend named Alan that would not approve of that behavior.
That's true. That's true.
But there's lots of stuff like I have a lighted mirror in the bathroom that we installed. That was like a $700 mirror that's coming with me. The new refrigerator upstairs that Derek put in, that's coming with me. The 20-year-old refrigerator that's still in my driveway, pressure wash that bitch and put it right back in the house. I don't care. All kinds of stuff like that. I think.
Wait. You could grab a cold driveway beer?
Why would I?
Oh, it's not plugged in. Okay, I got it. Sorry.
What?
I don't know what kind of life you live. You had a driveway fridge.
I have a bar fridge in my kitchen. Why would I need a driveway fridge?
If you're in the driveway.
Oh. Well, it's only in the driveway because that's where Derek moved it to when he installed the new fridge. And then inexplicably, he was going to do something with the old fridge. And of course, then he died. So there we are.
You make yourself a fish smoker.
I think it's actually probably fuzzy inside because it's been unplugged and in the driveway since I don't know when.
So. Shit will be on fire in the bottom of it. Dude, don't worry about that.
Smoke spores. So anyway, so I don't know. It's up in the air. We don't have any tentative plans. I've looked at a couple houses. There's one house that I would really love to get, but again, I don't know. I'm not pinning my hopes on anything, but I'm seeing the prices drop. So that's what tells me I'm in a good position, or I'm in an okay position anyway. But houses that I were looking at 2 weeks ago, like today, there was one house that had like a $20,000 price cut. And so I suspect that there's going to be a fair bit of that. And I suspect in 3 or 4 months, when people have been unemployed for as long as they have, and when they finally start going back to work, they're not going to be able to catch up. And there's going to be some vacancies and some...
Things are going to be so interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, so. I'm so grateful to still be working because, you know, I mean, and you look around town. I don't know how you guys are. I'm sure it's the same. But you look around town and you think, you know, how many of these businesses that are closed now will ever reopen again?
Well,
it's not.
I worry about that.
There's going to be a lot of that. I mean,
yeah.
Movie theaters are probably done.
Yeah. I mean,
who's going to go want to sit in an auditorium? I mean, the reality is this is going to have a huge impact on a lot of things that I don't think we've realized yet. Like, our lives are going to change.
A ton of small businesses are not going to survive this because, you know, even with the possibility of a Small Business Administration loan that is partially forgivable or whatever, you can't borrow your way out of months worth of no income.
Right. Yeah. And so I'm humbled and grateful that I managed to find a job that was stable in times of turmoil. So I guess lucky me. I'm glad I'm not working retail right now because retail is awful. I'm so grateful I'm not still working at Fred's. But on the other hand, I'm also, you know, I'm not exactly in a low risk job. So it is what it is.
Although it's funny, you know, I mean, so I'm, you know, feeling this week particularly vulnerable just because of our close proximity. But yeah. Working at Costco. Yeah. You think you're going to be able to social distance when you work at Costco? Do you think that, that if you're like, you know, stocking anything or produce or whatever at, every day at the Walmart or being a cashier someplace where you're handling money and everything all day long? I mean, you wear gloves and everything and they can put plexiglass halfway down in front of you, but you're at a high risk job where you're probably not getting paid very much money.
Yep. I don't know if you saw that Costco's letting first responders and healthcare workers cut the line.
Yeah, you know, I had mixed feelings about that because, you know, although we are fighting to get first responder status because of all sorts of, like, trauma that we can experience in my job, I will never be cutting a line.
Well,
get beaten by a baseball bat at Costco for cutting the line.
Well, you saw the, maybe you're not, you know, the Heroes Act.
Huh.
So, a couple things that may happen, although I'm not counting my chickens. So first responders and healthcare workers, which you are part of, I'm part of, they are, the Senate wants to approve a tax holiday for us for 4 months. So we would pay no income taxes for the next 4 months. Which, like, that's a fair chunk of change.
Oh, yeah.
And there will be a $25,000 incentive bonus for hazard pay.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's weird. Although, again, I mean, yeah, I get it. But, yeah, I don't know. Because, you know, I feel two ways about it. I think, yeah, sure, I can't do my job from home. It is a hazardous position, and it is going to get super big. It's already weirder than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, I see, like my hairstylist, like, how is she going to make her, not just her rent on her business property, but how is she going to make her mortgage payment? And by the way, anybody, you know, if you go to your bank about getting like it's called a mortgage forbearance where you can skip a couple of months of paying mortgage. Yeah, at the end of that time, it's not like they just tack on 2 months at the end of that, of the end of your mortgage and your 30-year mortgage. No, no. You skip 2 months of mortgage payments, and when you after that period, they want that whole bunch chunk of money right then, including the interest. So if you don't, then you get another gigantic payment on top of your mortgage that comes in that you have to pay off with equity a year or something. So it's asking for those things is dicey.
Yeah. Be careful. It's going to be complicated, and it's going to be, I mean, I really don't see this not turning into a huge recession. I mean, I hope not. I hope we're able to avoid that, but I don't see it. You know, it's already devastated plenty of businesses. And I have coworkers who are talking about their partners or spouses that work in other parts of healthcare that lost their jobs because nothing elective or non-emergent is happening. So one of the biggest clinic systems here that did things like outpatient surgeries laid off 800 people yesterday. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of that. So this is not the, you know, this is because the folks were like, well, you could come back to Anchorage and you can find a job and, you know, we can get you cheaper housing. And I'm like, now is not the time to be looking for a job.
Well, and I, you know, a lot of the the hospitals don't employ their employees directly. They go through like a employment company.
Yeah.
And some of those employment companies are saying, oh yeah, you know, doctors, nurses, techs. Yeah. Because of this whole thing, we're going to pay you 20% less. So it's like, yeah, you're going to have to come in and maybe expose yourself. If you do come to work, you're coming to exposing yourself to something that actually could have life changing or ending consequences. And yeah, you're going to be paid less for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a crazy world right now. I don't know.
Also, reuse your mask. They tell me the masks. I mean, I know what they're saying. I get it. But it's a mask that is designed to be disposable. Mm-hmm. It's just a paper surgical mask. I know there are some really fancy N95 masks. Oh, they're not going to be used by us. And it would be very hard to talk through for a living. But anyway.
I have three words.
What?
Duck and cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the reality.
Well, also, it's funny. We're all joking about how, you know, we're going to avoid the getting the Rona, but we'll all get, like, cancer from wiping our desks with the anti-baby wipes with, you know, without proper protection in 10 years. Because we're all just pouring these chemicals all over our offices now.
Well, yeah, the sani wipes that we have in the clinic that nuke everything.
Yeah.
That will sterilize anything in 30 seconds or less, provided it stays wet for that 30 seconds. I mean, that's what they instruct you on. Yeah, you're not supposed to touch those with your hands.
Exactly.
So yeah. You're right.
No, and we've been using those with our hands for years.
Yes.
And now we're using them like six times a day. Although we're going through a lot of Clorox wipes too.
Yeah.
So I don't know if, but yeah, like I've got the, I got the dishwater hands.
Oh yeah. Yep. No, me too.
I need to be soaking in it now.
Yeah. I've
palm olive.
Yeah. No, I've got contact dermatitis from dry hands. So, which is worse. Cause then you get cracked.
Yeah. Then you get. Yeah, yeah, no, it's open sores on my hands. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, but then I don't want to walk around with, like, corn huskers on my hands because they smell like an old man. So, ugh. So, Tiger Balm. And,
you know, you got people who want to glove up. It's like, well, that's great. But as soon as you, I mean, I guess you're saving yourself from getting infections in any cuts in your fingers. But as soon as you glove up for any length of time, you're just basically... Whatever you touch, you're going to touch your face. You're going to touch, you know, your other stuff. You're not preventing anything if you use one pair of gloves all day long.
Well, and I got news for you. If you've worn gloves for any length of time and your fingers start to sweat in any way, those gloves will fall off.
Yeah. Well, and did I tell you, wearing the surgical mask, let alone like a cloth mask that my lovely wife made.
I saw those are very cool, by the way.
Yeah, they're fun. It is hot. I mean, it's hot and it's like you're like rebreathing a little bit. So it's a little claustrophobic. And it steams up my glasses if I don't be very careful how I put it on. And it's like, that's not fun. And by the way, go to a grocery store wearing a mask. By the end of my little grocery trip, I am a sweaty mess. I look like the outbreak monkey. And I try to explain, no, I'm just a fat guy. That's all. I've been, you know. Anyway.
Yeah.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay.